Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Water is becoming an increasingly scarce resource around the globe. In the next decade, it's estimated that more than half of the world's population could be facing water scarcity as major aquifers are depleted, wetlands drained, and desertification advances. That means, I guess, the creation of deserts. So no wonder that there's a growing thirst for the fresh water from the Great Lakes. Already, billions of gallons are drained every day from Lakes Superior, Michigan, Huron, and Erie, and Ontario. A pact between Ontario and the states that border the Great Lakes to keep outsiders from draining the water. There is a pact, but the pact members themselves decide what they can take. In Ohio, the cap currently is at 2 million gallons. You can take up to 2 million gallons without having to seek a permit. Coming up, we'll hear about a trio of bills introduced in the Ohio General Assembly that address how much water can be drained from Lake Erie and for what. Right now, we'll hear about how the state of Michigan, which shares the shores of four Great Lakes, Erie, Huron, Michigan, and Superior, is doing with that pact language. Joining us now is Patty Burkholz. She's the director of the Office of the Great Lakes for the state of Michigan. It's a cabinet-level position. Patty's Republican. She served two terms in the Michigan Senate and was chair of the Senate Natural Resources and Environmental Affairs Committee. She also worked on the Great Lakes issues, including the adoption of the Great Lakes Water Compact, passage of state regulations for water withdrawal, and ballast water regulations. She is from the southwest part of Michigan and lives in Saugatuck Township along Lake Michigan. Welcome to the show, Patty.
Thank you. Nice to be joining you today.
In Michigan, new or expanding businesses must apply for permits to take more than 2 million gallons a day from Lake Erie. Mm-hmm. I know things are a lot more complicated than just that. Can you kind of give us a primer on how the compact works and what the relationship it has with what the states do on their own?
Well, the compact is literally like a treaty. It has that high level of law behind it because not only was it adopted by all of the eight states within the basin, it was also adopted by two provincial governments in Canada, Ontario and Quebec, thereby raising the level of its authenticity. And then our compact went to Congress, where Congress also adopted it. So it then became adopted by our congressional delegation on the federal level, as did the compact from the both of the provinces. Ontario went to their, or the provinces in Canada went to their federal government, and they adopted it. So it's now like a treaty status. So all of the states who are part of the compact, which is Ohio also, mm-hmm. Have to adhere to the requirements within the compact. The compact lays out some basic outlines, but bottom line is each state gets to adopt their own laws within those outlines. Michigan's is for withdrawals from the Great Lakes at 2 million gallons, as you mentioned. Anything above 2 million gallons and above, they're required to get a permit. And the basis of that was after several years of study done by experts from all areas, from the business community, from the farming, the ag community, as well as the conservation and environmental community. And the people who were appointed to this commission were appointed by the governor, the majority leader, and the Speaker of the House did this study, which has been authenticated by USGS, and it has been peer-reviewed. And in Michigan, the recommendation was that we be at 2 million gallons a day for water withdrawals from the Great Lakes themselves, and then the large users who were going to withdraw from underground aquifers are required to get a permit if they, depending on the anything over 100,000 gallons a day, but then dealing with the water, the ecosystem of that water unit. So it sounds a little bit complicated, but actually it's one of the easier water withdrawal laws that we have in the United States, I've been told by several experts.
My guest is Patty Burkholz. She's a director of the Michigan Office of the Great Lakes. If you have a question or comment for her, get it in, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Patty will be with us until the next break. So when we're talking about this 2 million gallon limit or threshold, mm-hmm. That's per business. Mm-hmm. and that's per day.
And yes, and now water bottling companies, it's a quarter of a million, because assuming the assumption is that if they're withdrawing 2 million or more, but they're not a water bottling company, they're probably a company that needs water that's used within their product. For instance, in Michigan, there's a famous baby food company in Michigan. You know, a lot of that canned baby food is somewhere between 40 and 60% water. We have a lot of food processors in Michigan who pack and can our fruits. A lot of those cans contain a large amount of water with, you know, where the canned fruit is housed in the can. So, you know, that's a different use than a water bottling company where they're, all of the water that they process goes into a bottle to be sold. So that's why we made that distinction. The bottom line is we've based it on the research in our within our Great Lakes in which Michigan is located to make sure we maintain the health of that ecosystem, because we felt very strongly that we could balance the use of our water for our economic engine, and it's very important for our economic engine, and yet to preserve the resource enough so we didn't literally use it up, but it was here for our children, our grandchildren, and all those who come after us. And we strove to get that balance so that we would contain and preserve the ecosystem and yet be able to use the water.
So there's four states, right? Ohio, Michigan, Pennsylvania, New York, and then the two provinces, Ontario and Quebec, involved in this. But each state and province is permitted to come up with their own thresholds, their own rules.
But they have, there are some parameters within the compact, and unfortunately I don't have a copy of the compact with me right here, Anne, so mm-hmm. I can't give you those. But I know that Michigan's fall well within the boundaries of the compact. So the idea is that you do not withdraw so much that you would deplete that aquifer, and literally, you know, you would be like sucking from a straw with no water at the bottom of the glass.
So what is what is your judgment at this point of what is being proposed in the Ohio General Assembly by members of the the ruling party, the Republicans, most likely are going to see passage of the bills because they have the largest majorities?
Well, from what I haven't read the bills themselves, but mm-hmm. I have seen the articles in the newspapers or some of them, and it appears to me to go beyond what we would deem, Michigan would deem as the right thing to do, as well as beyond what the compact would allow. As a signatory to the compact, you have to stay within the compact guidelines, or you're in violation of the compact. So, you know, you're in violation of a treaty form mm-hmm. of government, a form of operation. So that could create some real difficult challenges. I mean, I don't think any of the states who joined the compact or the provinces would want to have to go through states or provinces that were in violation of the compact. You know, the compact was formed in good faith and written by people from all of those governmental units. All of the eight states, as well as both of the provinces, were part of the writing of the compact. And you know, so that is a document by which to guide us for the future to make sure that we not only have the use of our Great Lakes, because we should have the use of our Great Lakes. They're ours, and they belong to us. They belong to the whole world also, but they belong to us. And we should be able to use them wisely and use them for our economic engines in our various states and our provinces. But we also, I think, without a doubt, everyone would not want to be part of a group that literally took all the water.
Jennifer Klein, she's from the Ohio Chamber of Commerce's Environmental Policy Director, and she told the Columbus Dispatch that there is no scientific evidence to show that existing water withdrawals are creating any problem to the Lake Erie watershed. What kind of scientific evidence do you have? I mean, how are they judging those kinds of things, and how do you judge whether something's hurt the economy or not, or is having an impact on the economy and job growth?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, if you're talking about first the whether it's harming the water, the aquifer. There are ways to tell that, and I'm not a scientist. I'll be the first to, you know, admit that. I'm not a scientist, but working with U.S. Geological Surveys and survey scientists and other well-recognized scientists in our state, we have some major universities here who have some very good, well-read, well-written, well-published scientists on these topics. And they were the ones who deemed the science that we built our law on as being informed, as being the right thing to do, and as being one where we've achieved that balance between, you know, helping our economy but all in our business community, but also making sure that we literally did not, you know, there have been places we've heard of lakes that have gone dry, and it could happen in the Great Lakes if we aren't careful about wise use. So there is that balance that we tried to seek, and I think, all, you know, by far the majority of our experts have told us that we've done that here in Michigan. There are always people on both sides in the extremes. There would be people who don't want us to use our water at all, but I think those are in the minority. There would be some businesses who would want to just, you know, use up the water for whatever their purpose was until it was gone from that aquifer, and I don't support that, and I don't think most reasonable people would.
You know, before I forget, Minnesota and Indiana are also in that compact. If I've forgotten anything
right,
else,
yeah.
You know, don't hesitate to let me know. So it's Ohio, Michigan, Pennsylvania, New York, Minnesota, Indiana, and
you went so fast I didn't count them all.
Ohio, yeah. Michigan, Pennsylvania, New York.
Wisconsin. Did you leave Wisconsin?
Yes, I did.
Okay, no, that's easy to do.
Minnesota, well, you know, not really.
Because it both,
I lived there too,
okay.
So.
So, you know, there is a balance there, and I feel very good that we have found that balance here in Michigan. Ohio's numbers sound quite large, and that would concern me, and if they did, you know, depending on what the legislation does, I mean, I was a senator. I know how those numbers can go up and down in the legislative process. But if they would violate the compact, that would be, first of all, I think it would be the first violation that we've had since the compact was signed by the governors, the premiers, and the president of the United States.
What would happen if they did?
Well, and there are measures to deal with states or provinces that would violate the compact, legal measures, and I think that would be a test case, I'm sure. I guess if I were a senator from a state that was going to do that, I would think long and hard about doing it, because not only will it put the compact at risk and the trust and good faith that you have with your fellow states and provinces, I think it would also tend to not give a positive not be a positive reflection on that state. I'm trying to be very politically correct.
Well, I just want to be really perfect, as clear as possible, because despite the fact that we're talking about water, for a lot of people, it's clear as mud. We're talking about thresholds, and are you saying that the thresholds, as proposed in the legislation that was introduced, that those thresholds would exceed what the compact calls for?
That's my understanding of what I've read in the newspaper account. So,
right.
Unfortunately, I haven't had an opportunity to read the bill. So, but that's what I understand.
Okay. Well, Patricia Burkholz, director of the Michigan Office of the Great Lakes, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, and good luck to you with this issue. It's very important. You know, our water is our very livelihood in the Great Lakes State, so we need to make sure that it's here for all those who come after us, as well as be able to use it while we're here.
Thanks again, and when we return, we'll continue our conversation about whether Ohio should raise its thresholds on how much water new or expanding businesses in Ohio should be permitted to drain from Lake Erie and its surrounding streams. Joining us will be Josh Knight from the Nature Conservancy in Ohio, and also a spokesman who will talk about why the new thresholds are perfectly fine. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Checking the weather for Central Ohio for this Wednesday, June the 15th. A chance of showers today, thunderstorms perhaps, mainly after 5 p.m. The high should be around 77 degrees. Tonight, a chance of showers and thunderstorms and a low of 64. On Thursday, partly sunny skies. Otherwise, a chance of showers and thunderstorms and a high of 79 degrees. Thursday night, a chance of rain once again, 64 for a low. And then on Friday, a slight chance of rain, mostly cloudy, and a low of 65 degrees. Right now, we have 71 degrees at our studios.
Weekday mornings, prepare for the day with NPR's Steve Inskeep and Renee Montaigne, and hear local news updates from the award-winning WOSU News Team. Listen to Morning Edition weekdays from 5 until 9 a.m. on 89.7 NPR News.
Support for 89.7 comes from the state auto insurance companies providing home, automobile, and business insurance products and services to Central Ohioans since 1921. State Auto is on the web at stateauto.com.
We're talking about whether Ohio should raise its threshold on how much water new or expanding businesses in Ohio should be permitted to drain from Lake Erie and its surrounding streams. Joining us now is Josh Knights. He's the executive director of the Nature Conservancy in Ohio, which opposes proposals to raise that threshold from 2 million to 5 million gallons a day. Josh is a governor's appointee on the Ohio Department of Natural Resources, Resources and Recreation Committee, and he has also served on the Great Lakes Compact Advisory Board. Welcome to the show, Josh.
Thanks, Ann. It's great to be on.
Also with us is Brian Barger. He's an attorney from Toledo. He has testified before the House in support of the legislation on the compact on behalf of the Coalition for Sustainable Water Management. That coalition includes the Ohio Chamber, Ohio Manufacturers Association, Ohio Aggregates and Industrial Minerals Association, Ohio Farm Bureau, Ohio Petroleum Council, Ohio Soft Drink Association, and the Chambers of Commerce for Cleveland and for Toledo. Welcome very much to the show, Brian.
Thank you.
I guess, Brian, we'll start with you. You know, we mentioned with Patty Buchholz, it's complicated. But there are dueling bills now in the General Assembly regarding these thresholds on how much water can be drained by Ohio businesses from Lake Erie. The first two bills, sponsored by Republican State Senator Timothy Grendel of Chesterland, and which is one county away from the lakeshore, and also Representative Lynn Watchman, another Republican from Napoleon, just about two counties away from the lakeshore. Those bills would create a threshold for permitting of 5 million gallons a day from the current 2 million gallons a day. What's the logic of the increase? Why not 3 million or 4 million or why not 6 million? How do you come to those numbers?
Well, let me clarify a couple things first off. First of all, when people are referring to the current 2 million, That's a threshold that's in Ohio law and has been there for quite some time with respect to consumptive uses. So there's a distinction between consumptive uses and withdrawals. A consumptive use is all of the water that is withdrawn is not returned back to the watershed. A withdrawal can have a consumptive use and just a return portion to it. So it's a really kind of an apples and orange type of comparison. What House Bill 231 does is sets a threshold for purposes of entering the permitting program at 5 million gallons a day for withdrawals directly from Lake Erie or that portion of a river or stream that's under the influence of Lake Erie, which would be basically the mouths of the river where it's really the withdrawals really coming from the lake. The 5 million gallon per day threshold was recommended by the Ohio Department of Natural Resources during the nearly two-year process that the advisory board met and discussed these issues. And my understanding and what we were told from Ohio Department of Natural Resources is that it would be very difficult to believe that a withdrawal of 5 million gallons could in any way significantly impact the ecosystem of Lake Erie. And the 5 million gallon withdrawal is really set at a level where the state of Ohio then is required pursuant to the compact to provide prior notice to the other states that there will be an application pending that is seeking to withdraw 5 million gallons a day of consumptive use. So
meaning water that won't go back.
That's correct. So that's the purpose of that threshold. And I would like to also point out that Indiana has the same threshold for purposes of withdrawals from either Lake Erie or I guess it would be Lake Michigan or the Lake Erie watershed. Mm-hmm.
Josh Knights of the Nature Conservancy of Ohio, is that your understanding of how the bills work?
That's my understanding of how the two bills that are currently, the two bills by Senator Grindel and Representative Watchman work. Our position on the thresholds is a little bit different. I think one of the points to for your listeners to understand is that the thresholds are actually set so that people that are taking newer increased withdrawals from the Lake Basin then need to go apply for a permit. Those aren't actually the limitations on how much someone can take from the lake. So, for example, we're advocating for a much lower threshold for the high-quality streams that are here in Ohio. And what that means is, and we've proposed, for example, 100,000 gallons per day as an adequate threshold to trigger an applicant to go and seek a permit. That applicant could still apply to withdraw 1 million, 2 million gallons per day. They're not limited to the 100,000. It just means that at 100,000, that applicant needs to go to through the process. And what's significant is that since 1988, all users of water who take more than 100,000 gallons per day out have to register anyhow with the Department of Natural Resources. So for us, this is really just a logical extension. The compact fits, in our opinion, very well with existing Ohio law and just further provides additional protection, not only for the ecological attributes of those streams, but also for users upstream and downstream and folks taking water from the lake as well. It's a tricky balancing act that the crafters of the compact tried to reach. And unfortunately, when you have a lot of competing interests, there are a lot of kind of trade-offs that enter into the equation. And that's why the compact language, I think, is a little more complicated than it probably needs to be.
Patty Burkholz of the Michigan Office of the Great Lakes says that as she understood it, and she acknowledged she has not read deeply into the legislation, but that the bills sponsored by Grindel and Watchman would not meet the criteria for the compact.
So there are a number of elements here. Some of them have to do with a decision-making standard. So when someone applies for a permit, the permitting agency has to decide whether or not that withdrawal is going to have a significant adverse impact. And the legislation sponsored by Senator Grindel and Representative Watchman make some changes to what was originally in the compact language. And those changes concern us. Those changes would, for example, frankly, devalue the impact on a tributary and focus more on impacts of a withdrawal of water from the lake itself. So to give you an example, if someone is taking water out of a stream, but your decision-making standards for determining whether or not you're having an impact look at lake water levels, that doesn't really reflect well on what will be locally happening to that stream. And if you're a local community, if you're a town or some other agency that relies on that stream, you would very much want to have the impact focused on that stream as the source watershed for the impact and not the entire lake level. So that's one concern. The other concern I think we have is that we don't want to engage in a race to the bottom with the seven other Great Lakes states or the two Canadian provinces. If we are seen as having very high liberal threshold levels for water withdrawals, that may encourage them to raise their levels as well. And Lake Erie follows the 80-10-10 rule. 80% of the water that goes into Lake Erie comes down the Detroit River. The other 10% comes from our tributaries and the other 10% from precipitation. So we have a lot at stake if Michigan and all the other states upstream were to increase the amount of water they were taking out of their lakes, because that would reduce the flow coming into Lake Erie.
Brian Berger?
Yes. And as I think Josh may be aware, and it was discussed briefly in the committee hearing last week, that there is a substitute bill that will be introduced that changes in many respects the standards that Josh is talking about. That's more reflective of looking at impacts to runoff in the watershed. Let me clarify a point, that one-inch standard that was discussed earlier that Josh mentioned was really a suggestion by the Ohio Department of Natural Resources throughout the work groups that met over last summer, to look at a standard like that as a placeholder standard, given the fact that there's really no science at this point that can accurately measure an impact from Lake Erie. And I would point out that the compact requires that not only there be an impact, it must be a significant adverse impact to the entire ecosystem of looking at the Lake Erie watershed as a whole. Now, I would say that, you know, Josh and the Nature Conservancy have advocated for basically an assessment tool in lieu of that, but that assessment tool likewise would not look at impacts directly from for withdrawals directly from the lake, nor would that assessment tool look at impacts with respect to groundwater. The assessment tool that was discussed, and I understand, you know, where Josh is coming from on that issue, is really applied to certain high quality streams under the existing legislation. So the legislation carves out a number of high quality streams, the smaller high-quality streams, and looks at those and treats those completely differently than it does other aspects of withdrawal in Ohio, recognizing the more sensitive nature of those, and given the fact that there is an existing tool that could be applied to those smaller high-quality streams. So the legislation does have that in there, and it's been in there from day one. So, you know, from that perspective, I would also look at the fact that the compact allows each state a significant degree of flexibility in terms of how the compact will be implemented with respect to the state, recognizing that the overarching prohibition in the compact is that the compact cannot be construed to impair, limit, or alter existing state law with respect to its water uses. Ohio has a very strong private property state law perspective on water withdrawals, and that was most recently seen when over 72% of the people that voted in favor of amending the Ohio Constitution to provide constitutional protection that each individual will have the right to use a reasonable amount of water, whether it's from a surface water source, a stream, a lake, or groundwater. And the Ohio Revised Code presently has a standard in there for interpreting what is reasonable. It's called the reasonable use doctrine. Ohio's a reasonable use doctrine state. Other states in the compact are not reasonable use doctrine states, so their water law is different than Ohio's water law. But fundamentally, the compact cannot be construed to impair those existing water law rights. So when you're looking at how House Bill 231 was crafted, it was crafted with respecting that prohibition in the compact, and then looking at how can we administer and implement the compact and its decision-making standards while not running afoul of existing private property right protection and the existing laws in Ohio.
Are you confident, though, that the way the language is now, or can it be amended, or can it be changed to fit into the compact? Patricia Burkholz suggested that if it doesn't, that could create a lot of problems down the road.
Well, I would suggest that before anybody comment on Ohio's program, that they fully read the bill and understand it. I think as everybody has acknowledged that this is a very complicated subject.
Well, that's why I'm asking you. Right. She suggested that she admitted that she had not read the bill, but if you don't, I mean, are you confident?
Yes,
that the
I'm
legislation...
very confident that the legislation not only meets the intent, it meets the legal requirements in every respect of the compact.
And for our side, we're less confident about that, but also we don't see there being a compatibility issue with the Ohio Constitution. Private property rights are regulated all the time. I mean, just think of zoning laws that are out there. So even though there was the amendment that that Brian mentioned, that still doesn't prohibit the state from going ahead and putting together some good and common sense regulations, regulatory program in place. The reasonable use measures that he mentioned, the reasonable use doctrine, actually is in the Ohio Revised Code, but isn't part of the Constitution. And a part of that actually does reserve the right for the state to regulate reasonable use. You know, the compact at its core is a balancing act. You have economic interests, environmental concerns, welfare for local cities and townships, and you need to balance all of those different things out. And the compact, the authors of the compact spent a lot of time trying to do that. The 127th General Assembly of Ohio voted to pass the compact as part of HB 416 back in 2008. So we've got something in place that that's good, that's balanced, that's compatible with Ohio law. So we don't understand why the two bills by Senator Grindel and Representative Watchman need to diverge from that. To the contrary, there is two other bills that I just want to make sure your viewers learn about, and that is SB 186 and HB 257. These bills have been introduced by Senator Skindell and Representative Murray, and we believe that they are they do a better job of filling the requirements in the compact.
Brian Barger?
Yes, just briefly responding to that, Josh, our group has advocated that if the legislature wants to change state law with respect to how it's going to look at uses of water, it needs to do so on a considered basis, looking at that law across all of Ohio, not have a different set of rules and different set of law with respect to those uses in the Lake Erie watershed versus the Ohio River watershed. So if that's the concern and the impetus is to change Ohio's water law, then that's an issue that needs to be brought forth front and center and have the General Assembly debate and discuss that issue.
So, Anne, sorry, one last thing, because we've spent a lot of time on threshold and whether or not the compact is compatible with existing Ohio law. But there is another important component to the compact, and that is water efficiency standards. In Section 4.2 of the compact, it requires that a water efficiency program be put into place for all users. And that can be a voluntary program or a mandatory program, and Ohio has opted for the voluntary path. And I have not seen the substitute bill that Brian mentioned because that has not actually been widely distributed at this point in time. But one of the concerns that we have is that those voluntary measures are not available for all users, that they are limited to new users, and we believe that anybody who would want to take advantage of those programs should be able to do so.
Okay, when we return, we'll continue to talk about legislation pending that would change Ohio law and how much water can be taken from Lake Erie and whether or not it agrees with the multi-state and the compact with all the Great Lakes states and two provinces in Canada. If you have a question or comment for our guests, Brian Barger, he's an attorney and represents the Coalition for Sustainable Water Management, and also Josh Knights, he's the Executive Director of the Nature Conservancy of Ohio. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
On the next Fresh Air, the story of American healthcare as seen from the perspective of a doctor at an inner-city Chicago public hospital. We talk with Dr. David Ansel about his new memoir, County, Life, Death, and Politics at Chicago's Public Hospital. Also, Michael Barson talks about his anthology of romance comics, Agonizing Love. Join us.
Fresh Air comes up in just 20 minutes here on 89.7 NPR News. Today, we have a chance of showers and thunderstorms, mainly after 5 o'clock, a high of 77. Tonight, a chance of showers and thunderstorms and an overnight low of 64. Then on Thursday, again, a chance of showers and thunderstorms, partly sunny otherwise, with a high of 79. Thursday night, a chance of rain, a low around 64 degrees. And then on Friday, a slight chance of rain, mostly cloudy otherwise, and a high of 74 degrees. Low that night, 65. Right now we have 72 degrees at our studios here on the Ohio State University campus. Tonight at 9 on WOSU TV 34, NOVA investigates the extraordinary impact that music can have on the human brain. They travel around the globe to meet people, such as the man who was struck by lightning and suddenly was inspired to become a pianist. Also, the man who uses drumming to alleviate his severe Tourette syndrome. NOVA even peers deep into the brain of Dr. Oliver Sacks himself for a rare glimpse of what makes minds musical. That's tonight at 9 on Channel 34.
Welcome back to All Sides. We're talking about whether Ohio should raise its thresholds on how much water new or expanding businesses in Ohio should be permitted to drain from Lake Erie and its surrounding streams. Joining us is Josh Knights. He's the executive director of the Nature Conservancy in Ohio. It opposes the proposals to raise those thresholds from 2 million to 5 million gallons a day. Very complicated issue, no doubt about it. Josh is a governor's appointee on the Ohio Department of Natural Resources and Recreation Committee and has served on the Great Lakes Compact Advisory Board. Also with us is Brian Barger. He represents the Coalition for Sustainable Water Management. It includes the Ohio Chamber, the Ohio Manufacturers Association, the Ohio Aggregates and Industrial Minerals Association, Farm Bureau, Petroleum Council, Soft Drink Association, and more. And Brian, I wanted you to talk about, give us some examples of how the current regulations, or as they stand now, hold back new businesses or expansions on businesses.
Well, presently, there really are no rules with respect to how much water a business can use, other than that use has to be reasonable. And that's regardless of whether it's a business, individual, you know, a farm, what have you. That's the bottom line law in Ohio. So with respect to how that would work, you know, what's holding people back now, there really isn't anything. There is a consumptive use regulatory program that we've discussed. But for the most part, those issues tend to be more directed towards, I would think, utilities and public water suppliers. But that program has not seen a lot of activity. So I think the short answer to your question is there really hasn't been anything at present holding, you know, the business community back. Now, with respect to what could happen under a very restrictive compact interpretation, business is concerned that it, first of all, sends the wrong signal, creates another layer of regulatory burden that's placed on those folks in basically the hard-hit industrial corridor of Ohio from Ashtabula to Toledo and on, that do rely on withdrawals from Lake Erie to, whether it's for power plants or public water suppliers or steel mills or automotive plants. I mean, an automotive plant, it takes 39,000 gallons of water to make one car. Interestingly, it takes 35 gallons of water to make one cup of coffee. It takes 1,000 gallons of water to make 1 gallon of milk. So, I mean, these are not...
Well, wait a minute.
Mm-hmm. You're going with the cup of coffee.
Those are, yeah, because I'm eyeing my cup over there right now. But I'm just wondering, what do you mean by that? I mean, those are interesting, but what do they really mean?
Well,
I didn't use 35 gallons of water to make my cup of coffee this morning.
But somewhere in the process to make that cup of coffee, it took 35 gallons of water to grow the beans, to wash them, to process it. And these numbers came from the United States Geological Survey and the United States EPA. So those are the numbers that are basically out there. And there's a lot of information that's available with respect to water uses. So, you know, Ohio is a water-rich state. Certainly the northern half of the state is a very water-rich state. And the availability of water, whether it's groundwater or water from the lake, has never really been an issue with respect to any withdrawals or uses up there to date. And throughout the process, when we met with the advisory board, the Ohio Department of Natural Resources was very candid in saying that, you know, there's roughly 3 billion of gallons of water every day withdrawn from that watershed, and there is no impact with respect to those withdrawals. So what we're looking at basically is a regulatory program from certainly the business community standpoint to address an issue that doesn't exist. Yet we understand we need to comply with the compact, and the compact was primarily there to prevent diversions of water. And as part of that, the lawyers indicated that you needed, if you were going to prohibit other states from diverting water, you needed an in-state regulatory program as well. But the impetus of the compact, and at least as I've understood it and have read it, and I've been following this issue since the late 90s, the impetus has never been that there was a problem with respect to in-state uses of water. It was just from a legal standpoint, you needed to regulate that before you could tell other states that they can't use the water that we have available. That was it.
So, Anne, just to respond to that quickly, I agree with a lot of what Brian said. You know, water is one of our most amazing natural resources in Ohio and throughout the Great Lakes, and we are not advocating for any type of a restrictive permit program that would end up pushing business out of Ohio or dissuading or discouraging business from coming to Ohio. Quite the contrary. We want to make sure that there's a balanced permit program in place so that people will come to Ohio because they know there will be sufficient water there for whatever it is that they're setting up, a power plant or a manufacturing facility, or even small business owners, which are a big driver of the economic growth, a nursery, for example. The other point to make here is that all existing users, as of December 2008, I believe that's the date, but all existing users are grandfathered. So they do not have to apply for a permit program. They can continue to take out the water that they are currently taking, which, as Brian says, is not having currently an impact on the lake or the tributaries in any broad sense. But certainly from a standpoint of going forward, we want to make sure that we can continue to attract good businesses to Ohio by making sure that they will have the water needed to run their businesses.
Christy Meyer, the Ohio Environmental Council's Clean Water Program Director, said less water in Lake Erie could damage fish populations and worsen already serious problems with sewage pollution and toxic algae blooms. We've heard about, a lot about those blooms, and she said that she was quoted in a story in the Columbus Dispatch on June 6th. Who's out there measuring those kinds of incremental changes in water and what kind of impact they have on the ecology of the lake?
Well, Division of Forestry, obviously, under the Department of Natural Resources, looks at a lot of those impacts. And, she's right from the standpoint that a lot of the sensitive areas, especially the streams, which are the areas that we've been advocating for a lower permit threshold for, are the spawning areas for walleye and perch. And those are the basis for a very commercially successful fishing industry. 40% of all of the marinas in the Great Lakes are found in Ohio waters because you find 50% of all the fish in all the Great Lakes in Lake Erie. It's the shallowest, warmest lake there is, and it's a perfect fishery. So as a result, we want to make sure that we continue to provide the water to support those jobs, as well as, the needs of power and other industries that are out there, and including, obviously, the enjoyment of Ohio citizens, whether that person be a fly fisherman or a hiker or birder or other nature enjoyer.
We have an email from Robert. He writes, often when the great importance of the Great Lakes as a water resource is mentioned, statistics such as the share of the world's water that is in the Great Lakes are mentioned. However, these statistics are misleading and imply that all of this water is available for use. In reality, the level of the water is what is so important to many uses, such as navigation, shoreline uses, such as recreation and home ownership, and so forth. Limits on withdrawals from the Great Lakes that are now in the formal compact first were adopted in the 1980s in the Great Lakes Charter, which was a good faith agreement among Great Lakes states and provinces. These permits are very well thought out and should not now be raised just to satisfy some special interest withdrawal uses. If you want to send us an email, you can send it to allsides@wosu.org. And Brian Barger, I wondered if you wanted to respond to that, you know, as a representative of the Coalition for Sustainable Water Management that wants to make these changes.
Well, first of all, I would say that I would have a hard time characterizing the broad coalition of organizations that are advocating for the passage of House Bill 231 as special interest. The reality is these are the employers in the northern part of Ohio. And, you know, if you really think about it, the group of people that would have the largest stake in making sure that there is a sustainable supply of water available would be the people whose businesses, jobs, and livelihoods depend on it. So I certainly take exception when people, you know, characterize the business interests. And let's be serious here. What we're talking about are public water suppliers, electric utility plants, a whole host of organizations, including, as Josh said, you know, the marinas and others that use that. Really looking at that from the standpoint of being a narrow special interest. It's this group of people that wants to ensure that there's a sustainable supply of water, not just now, but for years to come, so that we can have a good economy, vibrant lifestyle and the like, and certainly use the lake as a resource.
Well, Josh mentioned something earlier about the race to the bottom, is the way he characterized it, that if Ohio raises its thresholds that to keep up and compete other states, Michigan, New York, Indiana, Wisconsin, Minnesota, will do the same.
Well, first of all, I'd like to take this opportunity to say I have nothing but the greatest respect for Josh and his organization. I didn't know them very well before we started working on this. And throughout the 2 years that we've worked, I've really come to admire what that organization does and what it stands for. The fact that Josh and I have differences of opinion on I think would be a fairly narrow range of issues is probably not unexpected. But certainly with the concern of the race to the bottom, I don't see that way at all. I mean, you know, individuals are basically saying, look, Ohio's got a 5 million withdrawal level, you know, threshold from Lake Erie. But Indiana also has a 5 million withdrawal threshold. And, you know, you're not hearing those comments. The reason that the compact did not say that each state has to adopt a specific threshold is that it allowed for the states to set thresholds that are looking at the resources, the uses, and to allow the state the flexibility to design a program that fits within what the state wants to accomplish. And all the compact says with respect to setting threshold is that it must be done as part of a considered process. I don't think there can be any debate that the process that we've gone through for the last certainly 2 years on the advisory board is anything short of a considered, you know, deliberative process. So I feel very confident that we've touched that base in every way possible.
Legislation was introduced yesterday that counters the other ostensibly counters the other two bills by Watchman and Grendahl. It's sponsored by Mike Skindle, a Democrat from Lakewood, and Dennis Murray, a Democrat from Sandusky, both lakeside communities, by the way. What's the point of this legislation, Josh Knights, and are you comfortable that it's going to achieve the goals that I guess they're trying to achieve with it?
Well, I think what we would like to do is make sure that the issues and the approach that that we recommend has a chance to be heard and is publicly discussed, and that, you know, obviously Ohio's voters have a chance to take a look at this in some type of a legislative format. And, you know, we hope they obviously will contact their lawmakers and let them know, you know, what their views are on this particular topic. But we want to make sure that we've got that out there so that people have a chance to compare and contrast what the different approaches are. You know, I have to return the compliment to Brian. He has been a terrific person to work with, very open. And I certainly understand where his groups are coming from. Business needs a degree of certainty in order to make large investments. You know, business needs to know that there's stability over time. They, you know, can't deal with a lot of, or they don't want to, nobody does, deal with a lot of red tape and bureaucratic issues. And so I completely understand where he's coming from. And we talked about that a lot as part of the Compact Advisory Board, as he mentions. But unfortunately, we still have on a fairly narrow number of issues, but unfortunately, those are some of the most substantive issues out there. We haven't come to agreement on, but he and a lot of his colleagues have been very good in keeping the dialogue open. And as part of keeping that dialogue open, we're hoping the legislation that was recently introduced can be part of that discussion.
John from Grandview, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ann. I'll be quick. My understanding is that Lake Erie is the shallowest of the lake. I think that means it has the least water. And the last 5 or 6 years, from what I've read, all the water tables have been down. Weather goes in cycles. And I wonder if they're going to put anything in legislation that makes adjustments for the amount of water people are allowed to take out if the possible drought or the possible lower levels of water continue in effect.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine. Thank you, John, for that question. It's hard to imagine given the spring we've had. But Brian Barger, what about that?
Well, as I said earlier, there is a sub-bill, and it modifies and significantly the way that the state would look at that. And it really tracks the issue from a different perspective, looking at a withdrawal relative to the amount of recharge and runoff that goes into the lake. So I think that new standard certainly takes that into account, and it would be addressed and adjusted at a specific period of, periodically going through this, so that the Department of Natural Resources would have an opportunity to better calibrate that should there be any long-term trends. I think the audience is well aware of the fact that Lake Erie fluctuates considerably on any given windy day. There could be a 14-foot difference in the water level from one end of the lake to the other. So I think that the new standard, the new approach that's in the sub-bill, I think very adequately addresses that concern.
Josh Knights?
Well, your listener is right on in terms of Lake Erie being the shallowest of all the Great Lakes, which makes it, among the most vulnerable. In the western Lake Erie Basin, it's an average depth of about 24 feet. And what that means is that any further drops in terms of the lake level has significant implications for ports and transportation in places like Toledo, which constantly needs to work on dredging its harbor, which obviously is an expense to taxpayers. And so, we want to make sure that there's, again, an adequate amount of water in the system to avoid those types of issues. And if lake levels do drop over time, that there is a mechanism in place so that collectively as a society we can respond.
That's Josh Knights. He's Executive Director of the Nature Conservancy of Ohio. Josh, thanks for joining the show today.
Thank you very much for having me, Ann.
And also Brian Barger, he represents the Coalition for Sustainable Water Management. That's a business-backed group that wants to see changes in the law as it stands right now. And I want to say thanks to Brian Barger for joining us today.
Thank you.
And I want to point out this is a very complicated subject, and no doubt we'll be talking about it more in the future. So thanks for listening today. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is WOSU 89.7, WOSU HD1, and WOSU 820 Columbus, and streaming online at WOSU.org. 89.7 NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media.
Support for 89.7 comes from the Central Ohio Trauma System, working with community partners to make Central Ohio a safer place to live. Details about joining the Columbus Medical Association Foundation and supporting the Central Ohio Trauma System are goodhealthcolumbus.org.